Don't fall in love with solutions. Fall in love with understanding the problem deeply enough that the right solution then becomes obvious.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and we have a brilliant guest with us today. His name is Kevin Diaz. He's the founder of Ambiki, an EMR and practice management platform that he built for pediatric, speech, occupational, and physical therapy practices. His career spanned investment banking, English teaching in Japan, translation technology, and healthcare software. But the common thread for Kevin has always been that problem solving is messy and creates real-world workflow problems. In April of 2026, he released The Problem First Method, a book about helping teams avoid building solutions in search of a problem. That's what we're going to talk about today. Kevin Diaz, welcome to The Daily Helping. It is awesome to have you with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Richard. I'm super psyched to be here.
Super psyched. I'm super psyched. You know, when I read this, you're kind of like a Renaissance man, right? Teaching English, investment banking, practice management software, and all these different disciplines. But I want to go back into the Kevin time machine here. Talk to us about a few seminal moments, things that put you on the path you're on today.
Yeah, so I would start back at sophomore year at Wake Forest University. So I arrived a few minutes late to a history class, and there was a little old lady there with a stack of flyers about studying abroad in Japan. And I wasn't really paying attention to it. I kind of took one, shoved it in my notebook, and forgot about it. And a couple days later, I'm in my dorm room, and my roommate at the time, he was really into Honda cars and these Honda tech forums. And so I showed him the flyer, and he's like, oh, well, Kevin, you know, this is kind of cool. Like they have business classes so we can continue, you know, studying in our major, and the classes are in English. Like you don't have to have any, you know, prior Japanese knowledge. Why don't we give this a shot? So we did. I was supposed to study abroad for 6 months, ended up staying for the whole year, like absolutely loved it. So fast forward to my senior year, it's spring. I'm trying to interview for jobs, trying to apply. I'm not getting any interviews. I finally get one interview. It's like my one and only chance, or I'm going to be bagging groceries back in Massachusetts after graduation. And I sit down at the interview. He's looking at my resume. I'm looking at his business card. He sees study abroad in Japan. He says, do you know my mom? So his mom was the lady that had handed out the flyers, who was in charge of running the study abroad program. So there's a longer story there of like how I, you know, ended up doing really well in that interview. But obviously, like that sort of luck, and you know, that played a role in helping me get that first job. So the investment banking piece of it, I enjoyed the learning curve, but there was just something missing. Like I knew I didn't want to do this long term. Like my why wasn't there. And this was also 2006, 2007. So the cracks of the impending financial crisis, you could start to see them. So 2008, I quit my job, do a 180, and go to teach English in Japan. And at the first school there, it's a school for adults. And I noticed this pattern where the students who had been really loyal and at this school for 10 plus years, but they would rotate through a new English teacher each year, and they would have to say their goals again. And so there was this student database, but it was all in Japanese. So that was my first taste of like, trying to program something and trying to develop software. So I made this student database that you could track progress. It was in English and Japanese. And so that gave me that first sense of building something. From there, I made a translation app for my friend. I went to market that on a website, and I was talking to the sales guy, and he told me like everything that was wrong with it. It's like, you got to improve this, you got to improve this, you got to improve this. So I went home that night. I didn't sleep. I did all the stuff he told me to do. I called him up the next day, and he said, no way. Like, I didn't expect you to actually be able to implement all of that in a day. Why don't you talk to our founder? So long story short there, I was able to land my first development job, and that kind of set me off in software. And then a decade later, it all kind of converged where I was able to take the natural language processing things that I had done on the translation side and also meld that with the English as a second language teaching of kids that I had done, and, you know, build software for speech language pathologists to help them do their jobs better and help kids who are, you know, these tend to be SLPs who are working in pediatrics. So kids, you know, 0 to 8, 9 years old who need help learning to speak.
Amazing. And I'm going to flash forward in time a little bit. That's the benefit of our time machine here. We can go whichever way we want. You've written this book, which is now out and available everywhere, and it's a problem-solving book, The Problem-First Method. So what prompted you to want to write this book?
I would say there are two key things. So one is I just have a terrible long-term memory. So 20 years from now, when my three young boys grew up, I wanted to be able to remember the stories from my career that I could, you know, sit around the dinner table and tell them. So I wanted to get that down and get it out while it was fresh. But also, I wrote this book last year at a time where I was kind of personally struggling a little bit at work, where I was feeling these different pressures, and it was not sitting right with me, but I couldn't quite articulate like what I was frustrated with. And so when I really got down to thinking about it, like that's how the book came out. And that's where this philosophy, this way of thinking of not skipping right to solutions, but really sitting with the problem and starting with that, that's where it came from.
Let's now dive into the meat of the book. So problems, sometimes we don't even know they're problems, right? So take us through this, the 101 of this book.
Yeah. So I think a lot of companies, a lot of teams, if you tell them like you should be problem first, they'll be like, oh, hello, Captain Obvious. We all know that. But I think what I noticed was that it's very easy in practice in the real world with the pressures of investors, with what customers are asking about, with your competitor just launched this thing, that you get forced to skip that step and skip right to solutions, and you might end up building the wrong thing. Some examples of that. So I was on a call with a customer and they said, do you have auto pay? So this would have been a feature that, you know, patients could, or therapists could set it up that patients could automatically pay with their credit card after a session. So I said, no, we don't have it, but we could build that. Without doing any more discovery. And I just said, I knew that our competitor had that feature. So I said, yes, like, let's build it. But it turned out that our customers didn't actually need that feature. They needed something else. So their problem was a little bit deeper. They didn't want to auto charge after each session because they had different complex situations. What they really needed was an easier way to manage that. And I didn't do that. Do the discovery. I didn't do the work to figure out what the real problem was. And so we ended up making this feature that didn't get used. And it was, you know, a lot of time spent that we could have been spending building the thing that would have actually solved their problem.
So now with that as the premise, let's dive even deeper. So if somebody And you know, whether you're a team in a business or whether you're part of a family unit, right? And you've got kids and a spouse. So let's start going through the methodology and the problem first method.
Yeah. So I broke the book into four parts. The first part I call the trap, and I try to give some examples both of time, good examples and bad examples, both from, you know, my personal experience, but also companies, you know, like the iPod, Google Glass, Air Canada had an example. Then shifting part two into the mindset. So, you know, how do you stay problem first when the pressure is on? And then part three is the framework. So this is where I give some actual tools like the feature alignment document or the 10 question validation checklist. And then part four goes into building with discipline. So what it looks like when that theory kind of meets the real world of what's happening in life.
Okay. So I want to go through these a little deeper. Let's circle back to the trap. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So the trap can be another example here is that, you know, back when I started developing software, you know, 5-10 years ago, customers were less sophisticated. You know, they hadn't been using web apps that much. So when they would come to you with a support request, they didn't know exactly how to articulate what they wanted to. So it was a much easier to do some discovery around like the pain that they were feeling. Now customers are very sophisticated. Like everyone is, you know, on their phone every day. Everyone has been using 20-30 web apps. So they don't come to you with that problem anymore. They come to you saying, hey, we want export to Excel button here, or we want SMS messaging, or we want to be able to sync to our Dropbox account. So they come to you with these solutions, which might be the right thing to build. It might be the answer, but it might not be. So it becomes very easy to skip and just say, yes, we'll do that, instead of taking a moment to pause and try to dig a little deeper of, you know, well, why are you asking for that export to Excel button? What are you going to do with that Excel spreadsheet once you get it? You know, why do you need that? And sometimes when you do that digging, you can find that the problem was actually a little bit different than you thought it was. And if you solve it in a different way, you might actually eliminate a whole nother class of problems that might help, you know, even more customers.
Okay. Now this makes perfect sense. So now that we've dug a little bit deeper and we really know the why of what's underlying the need for whatever a proposed solution is, the next section of your book talks about the mindset. So walk us through that, Kevin.
Yeah. So this is also kind of like, how do you handle it when the pressure is on? So when the board is asking you, you know, what's your roadmap? And so that was something that we did a little bit different at Ambiki, because when you think of a roadmap, when you think of a map, it's very detailed. It has streets, it has buildings, you know, it has a lot of detail. But to get to that point, you need to have really understood the problem and you need to know exactly what you're going to build. And so when investors are saying, what's your roadmap? Teams tend to skip that step and just say like, all right, well, we're going to build X, Y, Z. So we tried calling it something else. We tried calling it an atlas. So an atlas is not as detailed as a map. You can tell what the terrain is. You have an image of like, hey, there's a mountain, there's an ocean, but you don't yet know the detailed thing of what you're going to build. So it's like it gave us the space to step back and say, these are the problems that we want to solve. And then we're going to empower the people on our team to figure out the best way to solve those, instead of having to feel the pressure of like, let's come up with a roadmap, or we need to jump right to this solution and go with that.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go.
It kind of sounds like it just dovetails off of what you're doing in the trap section, because rather than going right to a roadmap saying, hey, let's build a project plan that we're going to execute, you know, X, Y, and Z, it's almost like, okay, let's take a step back and let's have this mindset, which you didn't use the word collaborative, but that's inherently built into this, right? To move this forward in a way that we really can create lasting success, lasting change, and address issues. So I like this, because what this speaks to me about, Kevin, is this is really a thoughtful way of solving problems. And it can be, if executed right, I know we're going to talk about the framework about how all this can work. This speaks to a proactive approach to solving problems, rather than just putting band-aids on things, appeasing people who are, you know, I'm not interested in excuses, I'm interested in results. Like, there's always going to be that crowd, right? But this speaks to that, which is cool. Now, I know you said that part of this mindset is really about, well, what do you do when the board is tough, right? When there are people, because there are always going to be people who simply, they just want to be steamrolling to the next execution point, whatever that is. So just to spend a moment here, and then I want to get into the framework. For those ultra difficult people in leadership, and this can be your kid's teacher, right? There's all these situations where this would apply, where you have this ultra difficult person who doesn't want to get out of your way because they just want to rush into something. Give us a couple techniques that you've utilized successfully that are in the book that people can implement to move that through more successfully.
Yeah, I think being able to ask questions. So one of the techniques we talk about in the book is like the five whys. And that, you know, obviously that's not something that I invented, but, you know, being able to stop and ask, well, like, why do we need an API? You say, like, boss comes to you and says, like, I heard like APIs are the thing, like, let's have an API. Well, why do we need an API? Well, we need it because our competitor has it. Well, why does our competitor have it? Well, they have it because, and as you can kind of do that line of questioning, sometimes that can open the eyes of the other person to say, like, oh, okay, maybe we need to reframe this. Maybe we need to think a little bit deeper before we just jump to, you know, we need an API.
Okay. So it continues to be, and this is the theme that we've got so far, and I really enjoy this. It's asking thoughtful questions to continue to dive deep and get to the heart of why do we really need X? Why should we really do Y? I love this. Okay. So you've built a really cool framework for this that's been successful for you in these companies you've scaled. Talk us through the framework that lets somebody utilize this methodology from soup to nuts.
Yeah. So one part is the feature alignment document. And basically what that is being able to first, at the top of that, is can we articulate the problem, and can we articulate that in a way where we're not using any solution language at all? And also, can we put the terminology that, you know, is relevant to this project on the document, so that we're all on the same page and aligned when we say, like, you know, this, what does this word mean? So that differs a lot from the way that a lot of software companies operate with a traditional document where those kind of start with describing the solution that you're building right at the top. So a big part of it is just reframing it of like, start with the problem. And this document doesn't even really get into the solution. It's just, what's the problem? And can we state that without any solution language? And then, you know, going to like the 10 question validation checklist. So have we done these things to really do the discovery on this before we've decided that, yes, this is the solution that we want, and this is the direction we want to go to. So a lot of those tools are about like, make that lingering on the problem something that you can actually do and that it can actually force you to do and walk you through, versus, you know, feeling that pressure to just like skip and start building, which again, I think even in today's world, that pressure keeps increasing with AI, because now the cost of building has never been cheaper. You can spin up Claude or OpenAI, ChatGPT, and it can build things for you really fast. But if you're building in the wrong direction, I think you're doing yourself a disservice.
I can't help but think of the scene from Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark when they realize they're digging in the wrong place because they had a counterfeit medallion. And so they didn't have the directions to where the Ark of the Covenant was. This is kind of the same thing, right? Like if you're foundationally incorrect in what you're trying to build, it doesn't matter how quick or efficiently you can build it if it's wrong foundation. So this is great stuff. Is there anything else in the framework or did we nail it, Kevin?
Well, there's the problem atlas. So that goes in a little bit deeper on the planning side of things. So when I go talking about that, so not before you come up with your roadmap, how do you get there? And so the way that we did that at Mbiki was we actually did a series of surveys. So first I sent out a survey to the whole team of, and we do quarterly planning, and we said, all right, for this quarter, what do you see as the top three problems that you think we need to tackle in this quarter? And had the whole team fill that out. And then I reformatted it a little, you know, I merged ones that were similar into one. I took out some that had some solution language in there. And then the second survey, I had a smaller team of leaders go in and rank those of not only like, which ones do you think are really the problems that we need to solve, but also like, if we solve them, would move the meter for the company the most, or would, you know, have the most customers that it would help. And so that methodology is also talked about in the book of how you can think about planning in that way to help you before you just jump to a solution-driven roadmap.
Awesome. And let's talk briefly about section 4 of your book.
Yeah, so I think this is what it looks like when the theory meets the real world. And I also have some examples of, you know, how we got it wrong in there. And it's still something that I need to be reminded of and struggle with to this day. I have a month ago, I had two teammates come to me in sort of a AI intervention of like, Kevin, like, think back to your book. Like, is this really what we need to be building now? I was, you know, having a lot of fun playing with the new AI tools and being able to build a lot of stuff. And they called me out on my own book of like, hey, you know, is this really grounded? Are we solving the right problem here? And so I think, you know, that's what that last section really touches on, is melding, like, how do you take this theory framework and how do you apply it in the real world, and what do you do even when, like, you know, it's not going to work perfectly the first time and you're going to make mistakes and, you know, you're going to have bumps, and how do you deal with that and how can you implement it even in pieces if you're not implementing it 100% perfectly at first.
Kevin, this book is cool and this book is needed because you touched on AI, but we're in a world where AI is really changing all the things that we do in business, and AI can never be humans. And what you're giving us a framework for is to apply a very human, very thoughtful, proactive lens to everything we're doing, whether it's building a software platform or whether it's organizing a kid's soccer team. So I love this. As you know, Kevin, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests a single question, and that is, what is your biggest helping? That one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today.
I would say don't fall in love with solutions. Fall in love with understanding the problem deeply enough that the right solution then becomes obvious.
The book is called The Problem First Method. We'll have a link to that in the show notes if you want to check that out for yourself. But if somebody is just excited to learn more about you, Kevin, where can they find you online?
I'm mostly on LinkedIn. I also have my own personal site, kevinsdiaz.com. I put my writing there, and you can find me there as well.
Perfect. And we'll have links to everything Kevin S. Diaz, including the book again, in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. Well, I've enjoyed our conversation today. I learned a lot. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us today on The Daily Helping.
Thank you so much, Dr. Richard.
Absolutely. And thank you to each and every one of you who took time out of your day to check this out. If you're excited, if you learned something that you could implement from this book in your home life or your professional life, go give us a follow and a 5-star review in the podcast app of your choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping. Because the happiest people are those that help others.